Does everybody have chairs? This is great. Okay, well, welcome to the Rooftop Poetry Club. My name's Lisa Forrest. I recognize some of you because I came to Irene's poetry class a couple weeks ago, and that was a lot of fun. So it's great to be here. And if any of you are interested in joining up on Rooftop, check out our website. And if you'd like to become a member, just simply send me a bio, a photo of yourself, and a couple of your poems, and I'll make you up a web page, and then you just pay attention to the events, and you come when you can. That's all that's to it. We do have student readings coming up. We have open mics every semester, at least a couple. We do themed readings. We do blog contests. We do music, art projects, all sorts of really interesting things. Those of you who are just coming in, you might need to grab chairs from one of the side quadrants over here and just pull them over. We weren't sure how many people were going to be here. They're right around the corner there. Okay. Does anyone have any questions about Rooftop before we get started? Okay, we have two great poets here today, and I'm really pleased to be introducing them. I'm going to actually start with Barbara. Barbara Hollander, Buffalo poet, is the author of four books of poetry and a children's book in Hebrew, which sounds really fascinating to me. Her poems and essays have been published in numerous journals and anthologies, and many of them have been set to music. Please welcome Barbara Hollander.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And to see all of you, I have to decide which glasses I need. I'm going to start with a poem that I really wasn't going to read, but having spilled a glass of tea all over the podium, I think I'd better. Pardon?
Can you speak loud?
Oh, yes, I can speak very loud, as you know. This is called Birthdays. I wish I were 80 again. 80 was such a good year. I hopped out of bed and I took off my nightgown and I looked at myself, my bare naked self in the full view mirror, and I said, "Who are you and what have you done to yourself?" Nothing was familiar except my eyes. And I said, "Well, wrap her up and get her out of here." And we went out on the town, my mirror me and my real me. Our biblical span is 80, or even by reason of strength. No, 80, or even by reason of strength, 80. Well, I said I got my 80 by reason of strength, and I'll get the rest on guts and gall. Get out of my way. 81 has not lived up to expectations. My arthritic toes curl under, except for my hammer toe that laps over. And my fingers are knobby, and I'm dropping things, especially glasses of water. Don't trust me with a glass of water. Nothing dramatic, little things. Except I did get hit in the head by a moving car as I sat up in the drive-thru exit lane after I fell off the curb. But my mind is clear, except when things drop through the slot. And I do look forward to a long and fruitful life. I'm waiting for 82 and a measurable improvement. I'll tell you, I got there and it is better. Ann C. requested that I read something from Shiva poems. So I will start with this. I wrote this book after my husband died, and that was 33 years ago. Do the dead dance? Even on the small screen, I could see they were champions. Samba, rumba, paso doble. Just the set of their heads showed it. Never mind hips and feet. They were sequined and plumed, and with each spectacular turn, I said, "Will you look at that?" as if you could hear. My nimble boy, your feet were never still. I'd watch your calligraphy on ice, flat on my pants, freezing. You necked with me, But you took Dottie dancing till I said, I dance as well as I kiss. After that, it was waltz, foxtrot, two steps, every Saturday night. Those extravagant years. When your legs went bad, I wept for your pain. But you said, what bothers me is I have no grace. I thought I'd done grieving, but I heard you call, hon, hon, and I felt your arms around me. And I turned back such a long, long way. Did you want to dance? I'm going to take you on my travels. I usually read about people, and this time I'm going to read about places. But there are people in them. The little life. My luck is such that during the golden age of Pericles, I would have lived in Spain. I am that Zen goose in the famous unbreakable bottle no exercise of wit will get me out of. But that I squeeze back in, saying politely, is this the way to Athens? Still, even the little life is susceptible to greatness. Sometimes, within, a dislocation Plato might have felt, when like a Chinese bridge from fog to fog, rises a thought that holds our weight. So after my husband died, I started traveling, and I went to Alaska on the University of the Sea. Oop, wrong book. No, it's not. It's the right book. It's the wrong poem. And we got into Glacier Bay, and if you have never been to Alaska, don't wait, go. After a week of our grumbling at the rain, the sun splitting the morning fog kept the captain's promise. At the head of the bay they waited, glittering rivers of ice. Silence was the right response. Look, we shouted, and the glaciers calved. Great icebergs tearing away with a roar and a hiss. Blue sky, blue ice, blue sea festooned with clouds, and I with only two eyes to take it in and a lens to diminish the sight. All I wanted was a place to stand alone, watching the drowned clouds swallow the sun and the mountains brood over the glacier beds. There's a row of heads at the bottom of my snapshot. Nowhere could I perch above the crowd. I scaled the ship that day for solitude. Now, for company, I plumb this photograph for a familiar scarf or hat, the recognizable back of a head. Then I went to Greece, and we had a guide whose English was, let's say, very, very loud and strong. The tempo of Poseidon. The strident voice of our Greek guide stomps out every syllable. This is the Marbo tempo of Poseidon. I drift away from the harsh lecture into the surreal light of Sunion. The tempo of Poseidon is molto largo e calma, the air suspended, the paper ships stuck to the horizon. everything waits for Theseus. Later, bathing below, we look up at the slim pillars of everlasting grief and speculate on the angle at which Aegeus leapt into the sea and whether he took a running start. The black sail hovers in the distance, lads and maidens saved to dance upon a vase. The votive fire extinguished revives in the strange anticipatory light. Then I went to France with Candace Lombard, and she taught me to drive a Peugeot 106 in 4 days. But before we went, I studied French because I knew I'd be alone in Provence, and so I wanted to be able to get along. And we had a lunch with her friend, La Fête Champêtre. "But I can't speak French," I say in French. "Oh, but you must," they say. So in this Monet garden, under a dappling tree, a small breeze sighing Debussy, the poulet grillé laid out like an odalisque on its bed of greens, with the perfumery of wine and mangoes, to the delicate click of cutlery and the howl of a hound on the tail of an hysterical mallard, in an eloquence of eyebrow, shoulder, and interpretive fingers, I, who cannot speak French, speak French. And Agnes, who cannot speak English, speaks English. And Candace and Genevieve speak both. And the dog speaks dog, and the duck gets away. The point is, I read somewhere, if you don't know a word, make it up. 9 times out of 10, you'll be right. Such a lovely pique-nique. And I'll tell you, in French, that's it. It really is. Well, you know, the French were all very nice to me, and I don't know why I felt I had to apologize all the time, but I did. Why I apologize to the French in French? Because having studied the language seulement pour le voyage, I felt obliged to use it when, for example, I leapt into the last remaining parking space in the village on market day with a grand screeching of gears and a helpless stalling stop, and caught sight of the startled faces of 2 men hanging over an adjacent balcony. I graciously explained to them, "Je n'ai pas l'habitude de conduire à ma vitesse." I'm not used to a manual shift, as if they didn't know. Similarly, it came in handy when I made the only known projectile entry into the Paris Metro. Still prone, I retrieved my hat, scrambled into a seat, elegantly crossed my legs to hide the ladder in my stocking, and with great dignity informed the sea of impassive faces that I hadn't the habitude of falling into the metro. When one's behavior lacks gravitas, it behooves one to acquire an air of insouciance. I felt behooved, yes, indeedy, behooved as anything, which is why I stopped apologizing and dealt with my errors, having a perfectly beautiful accent and a very limited grasp of the language, and held my tongue when my $75 ticket for Corsair turned out to be a concert version of Giulio Cesare. C'est la vie, and all that. Then, among my travels, I went to Israel, not once, but many times. And I studied at the language center in Netanya. And that was a wonderful experience because for many reasons it gave me the language, and it also gave me my friendship with my dear friend Roman Rabinovich, who was here to perform a piano concerto with the Philharmonic over the weekend. So if you can't catch him on Friday morning, do come Saturday night. And without the language, I wouldn't have met him. Where is Speaking in Tongues 33? Speaking in Tongues. Learning the language. One day in Bible study, Clarence is asked to read text in English. He starts, hesitates. What's happening? He's American. Surely he can read English. He smiles sheepishly. I started reading from right to left, he said. It made no sense at all. Where did you learn Hebrew? I asked Armenian Inessa. Here, at Ulpan, she said. And where did you learn English? I don't know English. Suddenly I realize all along we have been speaking Hebrew. Akiva, an illiterate shepherd, began to study at 40, became a famous rabbi, a scholar. Smaller than any of my classmates, I tower above them in age. Every day I learn, every other day I forget, in and out, in and out. They help me, these bright youngsters from Russia, Germany, America, and I brood on them how hard it is to be 20. Barbara is the ima, the mother of the class, says Charlie in Hebrew. She has nisayon. What's that? Life experience, he says wistfully. Sing Shabbat, sing Shalom. Now, that at this Ulpan, we studied Hebrew, and the Arab students came from Shechem to learn Hebrew, and the Israeli nurses studied Arabic. So it was a wonderful mixed experience. And it was in the 80s, 90s, early, when there was no trouble between us, and it was wonderful. Sing Shabbat, sing Shalom. Someone has picked mint for this tea, followed her nose in the dark. We sip and sing in the courtyard. Stars big as plums hang in the listening trees. The moon climbs the scale of one pure voice. Whoever knows sings in Hebrew. Who doesn't hums along. Now the rhythms change. Arabic hit lilts from our reticent friends. We clap the beat. We la la la. If it were up to us, we would launch songs across the borders. Big balloons of words like the comic strips. What do the songs say? Love, mostly, and longing. There are in Hebrew 5 words for longing, 4 for peace. Now, in Tel Aviv, as Roman can see, paddleball is the big thing. Everybody on the beach in Tel Aviv is playing paddleball, and that's all you hear. Drives you nuts. But I thought, on the beach at Tel Aviv. I am composing the paddleball concerto, scored for marimba, woodblocks, and chorus of men's shouts. The balls, tuned in Eastern mode, clack a jazzy rhythm. Puck, 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 puck. A wide-winged avenging angel cloud broods over the water. As the sun pokes and pushes its way down, now spraying fans of light, now spreading a molten swath on the sea face. Surfers dot the danger, absolutely no swimming zone. In a confusion of rhythms, the day winds down. Surfers in horizontal sweeps, the cloud melting shift shape, sun sliding through and retreating, a sneaky winning puck. The concerto ends in a coda of high fives, moans, and laughter as the sun drowns in a fiery finale. Then I ended up in England, and my British friend took me to Stonehenge. And this is a song at Stonehenge. Adam, do you remember that cloudless day we drove through the countryside that looked to me like mid-state New York? And suddenly I shouted, "Adam, stop! We must stop!" Stonehenge. It reared up out of the hill, out of the art history books. There was no one about, just the two of us, winding through the pillars and piles of that mystical place, when I heard a whistling, and looking up, saw a tiny bird spiraling up, up, singing its heart out, a lark rising on its note into the limitless blue, up, up, a speck in the sky, and then nothing to see, but the song pierced the air long after. And now, years gone by, I listen to the lark ascending and see the mysterious scene and hear the bird song and remember gratefully that perfect blue day when you, my voluble friend, have the grace to remain silent. Then I went to Italy, to Florence and Rome. And I was just surfeited with art, galleries, sculpture. This is Veni Vidi. I know in Latin it's Veni Vidi, but I was in Italy. Veni Vidi. Body parts Italiano. On the day of the prophetic rising in this marmoreal boneyard, faces will find their noses, castrati their private parts, gesturing hands their fingers. Torsos, heads, arms, feet will assemble in a danse macabre, clicking together seamlessly. Rome will be built in a day, Firenze overpopulated, tourists discomfited by white staring crowds. "Ah," they will say, recognizing an eloquent shoulder, a fabled decapitato. "This is all very fine, but is it art?" And then I went to the Borghese Museum in Rome, which is a treasure house. As the visitors leave, Pauline Bonaparte Borghese rubs the stiff elbow she's been leaning on, munches the pale apple, and sheds the draperies from her lustrous loins. Time for a little diversion. But no prospects in sight save David in the next room, snarling at an invisible giant and stretching his sling. Good bones he has, and sinews, very sexy in his anger. Aeneas, on the other hand, is sensitive, but overly occupied. Perhaps he could unshoulder the burden of his father, prop him against a tree, the Daphne tree there, partly leafed already. Actually, Apollo's the ideal catch on the rebound. Pauline muses on an arrangement of Anchises and his dutiful son against a leg of Daphne and draws Apollo onto her gilded couch. "Go to hell," he snaps, unreconciled to his foliate fate. Whereupon Pauline slithers into the great hall under the eye of Hades, bearing the weeping Persephone. can't stand women crying, he mutters, and sets her down to get over it, leaving Cerberus to guard her with his three toothy maws. Persephone rubs her leg where Hades' fingers have dug deep. Around the room, ancestral heads stare from their pedestals. She feels their disapproval, but Pauline, entwining arms with Hades, twitches her white hips at all those bodiless boys. Now, every once in a while, something happens that is a poet's dream. I read in the Los Angeles Examiner a while back that the Vatican has decided to recognize Galileo 400 years late, but here, I'll read you just a little of this. Rudimentary telescopes, celestial globes, and original manuscripts by Galileo are going on view at the Vatican Museum as part of an exhibition marking the 400th anniversary of the astronomer's first celestial observations. Well, anyway, you know what they did to Galileo. They brought him before the Inquisition in 1633, and he was supposed to be killed, and then he wasn't. He was commuted to house arrest. And now, at a briefing to launch the exhibition last week, Monsignor Gianfranco Ravasi, the Vatican's top culture official, declined to revisit the Church's 17th century condemnation of Galileo for saying that the Earth revolved around the sun. Well, he preferred to look ahead and not back, which is about as close to an apology as Galileo will ever get from the Vatican. In any case, he is dear to my heart. Where are you, Galileo? Yes, you know what the legend says that he said under his breath, "Eppur si muove." Still, it moves. Forget about the books and charts, drawings, proofs, telescopes, the multitudinous experiments, letters, approbations, condemnations. It's worth a trip to Florence just to see that imperishable relic, Galileo's right middle finger, enshrined in a gilded crystal cup atop a marble pedestal, inscribed with reverential verses in the Museum of the History of Science. What glory, Galileo, forever giving the finger to the Pope, the Inquisition, all of history for the 350 years it took to set things right. His students knew he had the goods, and the craven dons who pursed their lips and let him take the rap, till cowed and broken, he caved in. As one translator has it, he was reduced to hush. Yet legend says that sotto voce he held his ground and dreamed of vindication. Thus inspired, I dream that dream. Perched on his rolling sphere, I dream I am that butterfly whose wing beat sets off a typhoon halfway around the world. Speeding starward on a phrase, I dream I hoist a gorgeously bejeweled, enameled claw to every editor who ever rejected me. You know who you are. Relic that I am, I dream I end upstuck in a gilded crystal inkwell, pedestaled upon a marble book, the poet's essence, defiantly reductio al digitum. Thank you.
There's a lot of people in here, and there's more chairs. Everyone needs to move in a little bit because there's room here still and it's way crowded back there. Thank you, Brooklyn.
Thank you, my dear. I've got my scraps all over, but I didn't spill any water.
You got it?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, we're getting settled here. Good. You guys back there, if you all want to move forward a little, then we can fit more chairs behind you. Like, there's some places up here. Just so I don't forget too, when we're done today, if you're sitting on a chair that's wood and blue, if you could bring it back to one of those tables back there, it'll keep me from having to move them all by myself. All right, so just remind me if I forget to mention that. Okay, great, we're settled. Barbara, I want to thank you very much for reading. That was wonderful. Thank you. Now, I'm not sure if you guys realize this, but Rooftop has been meeting either on the roof or back here now for 5 years. Which is a little hard to believe. And about 5 years ago, I decided with Dennis Reed, who is the web designer who does the amazing Rooftop website, that we wanted to do a poetry club. And I just got into campus. I didn't know many people. And this beautiful woman with curly hair came to our first meeting, and I think there were four of us. And it was Irene. So she's been by my side through all this. She makes working at Buffalo State such an enjoyable experience for me. She's wonderful. She's a wonderful friend, a wonderful poet. I have her little bio here. Irene Siples is a native Buffalonian who completed her graduate work at the State University of New York at Buffalo under Robert Creeley and Leslie Fiedler. Irene has taught composition at Buff State since 1999, where she is currently a full-time lecturer in the college writing program, and as many of you know, she also teaches a poetry class this semester. Her work has appeared numerous times in numerous publications. So please welcome Irene Siples.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Barbara, how wonderful. I'm afraid I'm much more local in my... How
local
wonderful.
We need local.
Okay. You're lucky to have done all that traveling. This poem is an odd little poem called Joey. Joey is a term for a kangaroo. Okay. Joey. Chasing this damn kangaroo into conference rooms and attempting to keep an image of normal. The kangaroo breaking my hold on its leash, dashing down canyons into waters I can't traverse, picking a fight with a large dog, but then pawing his own ears, forgivable. But he must be returned to the park where animals are kept to live in safety, or is it a zoo? I have a couple of poems that I felt like reading that were written for my daughter. She was dehydrated and very ill, and we went to the ER. This is called Red. After you filled the sink with blood, we waited in the emergency room. You lay on a narrow metal gurney holding my hand, and we named everything red. Ruby, cherry, tomato, poppy, rose, cardinal, holly, ladybug, fireball, traffic light, valentine, tulip, poisonberry, ketchup, lipstick, the scarlet tanager, a small bird, male, of the family Thraupidae, lights on a frightened branch in my heart, while you, small bird, female of my family, listen for the doctor.
Mm. Loud enough?
No? Okay, I'll try. Okay. This is a few years after that, and it's 13, and it's still for my daughter. Girl with toothpicks pinned through dandelions in her hair, entwined with tiny pale violets, who wondered at four if tenderloin behind glass at the butcher's came from tender lions, who has lived since 10 on grain and grass, who has hollering in her heart, who has screams in her dreams, who sleeps on watch for spiders and ghosts, who wears shoes 10 feet tall, who writes a poem that says, "My outfit kicks ass. It kicks many asses many times." So I have to have one for my son, to be fair. Painting at an easel. Painting at an easel in the kitchen, the three-year-old boy splashes green, orange, brown, yellow, and titles it "A Glad Tree That Laughs." At 4 1/2, he whispers to his mother he will tell his grandchildren so many funny stories about her. Sledding down the hill in the front yard, the 5-year-old, bundled in snowsuit, scarf, and mittens, declares his descent an unbecredible masterpiece. This is for fall. Fall. We fall, we fall, we all. It's still summer. I dream Pablo Neruda's tomato. I dream Pablo Neruda dancing with his wife. I paste the dream on the cupboard to make it last. I hear on NPR of Australian Aborigines who can see the separation of noun and verb, the fire from the burning. And I try to dream this dream with its vocabulary so subtle, image and feeling bleed into each other, a dozen washes of ochre on an ancient earthen wall. This poem I wrote some time ago for a student here at Buff State. Different. When you were 8 and you lived on a big black rock alone, and a door opened and your father fell down the cellar stairs, and the nuns scolded with their fingers flying in your face, and ghosts slept under your covers, and your mother was confounded by what you couldn't do and what she had to do, and you knelt on the wooden floor and shivered, and your heart beat loudly, so loudly the neighbors heard it booming, heard the reverberation through the window panes. But they couldn't listen, they had to leave for work, and you wanted to close your eyes, you couldn't sleep, you had to keep your vigil. This is a poem for Lisa. Where's Lisa? You know this poem. Yeah. It's about Rooftop and all the other things that Lisa does. See what Lisa started? Dennis is reading poems on the rooftop. David is reading poems in the International Student Lounge. Lisa is reading poems on the radio station in Virginia. And we are reading poems in the New Art Center. Students are writing poems on discarded library maps, creating collages to display along the corridor. Shanice is reading the first poem she ever wrote in her dorm room, homesick and dizzy. Another David is reading to students and faculty about Valentine's Day in a love poem competition. Lisa is singing poems and accompanying herself on the guitar her father once upon a time had sent to her. Kim is reading poems on her porch, the wind chimes tinkling, the cat curled in a sunbeam. Slides and vinyl and water, threads of melody and kitchen sinks reveal their mysteries to us. We can't say no to them. Notebooks open, laptops unfold, pencils scratch. We listen, we look, we remember, we describe, we dream, we scribble, we type, we write, we read. See what Lisa started. I have two more. One is written about a year ago for the Birchfield Penny opening, so I wanted to read it also because students are here who I always drag over to the Birchfield Penny because I'm so excited about it. So this is from the Birchfield Penny opening, November 22nd, 2008. Thank you, Mr. Birchfield, for whispering dreams between the branches of your silver birches that opened our sleeping eyes to owls barely seen on oaken limbs and wild moons courting cumulus clouds behind clapboard shingled barns that bats shadow past, pricking the comfort behind our eyelids. Thank you for shivering our bones with the always wind that trembles between what we see and God's secrets that we long to see, that invite us to bend backwards with arms arched over our heads as we sigh in earthly pleasure. Thank you for breathing so deeply that we feel it still, and even those who are hesitant to accept, you have wrapped in red ribbons of wind, enticing and enveloping, so that something new could come to us in Buffalo, the steel town, the home ground, the home of starkest winter, to make our spirits soar in this sculptural space, this light-worshipping, curving creation of imagination and matter, of height and wall and glass and color. We would, if we could, wake you and show you and ask you and thrill you and thank you, Mr. Birchfield. The building of the Birchfield was somewhat controversial, so that is what, in part, I was referring to. Not everybody was so delighted with the new building and the architecture. And this weekend, or is it next weekend? This weekend, in celebration of the anniversary, there is a talk on Saturday afternoon by someone from the architectural firm. All the events are free, and they start Thursday and go through Sunday. There's music, there's plays, all sorts of things, if you also want to celebrate the Birchfield. Well, those of you who know me will probably laugh at this. It's called Writing Teacher's Dilemma. Her backpack is bursting with unread essays on empathy and indifference, on argument for and against gay marriage, on relating Motown lyrics to social activism in the mid-60s. But Friday evening, she goes to a fashion show with a friend in a church, samples hors d'oeuvres and champagne, admires the model's verve and towering heels. Her backpack is bursting with letters of recommendation to write for students who, despite retention efforts, want to transfer to another college closer to home. But Saturday afternoon, she visits Trimaine to walk barefoot in her friend's breezy paintings of sea and sand. Her backpack is bursting with exercises on the annotated bibliography to be written in MLA format, including at least 6 online and print sources. But she opens the door to her friend's Volvo to head for the country to trample crumpling leaves because it is Sunday and 60 degrees on November 8th. Her backpack is bursting with papers comparing and contrasting Dudley Randall's Ballad of Birmingham to an anonymous traditional Scottish ballad, but she and her husband go to listen to Roman Rabinovich play the piano because he is a prodigy who defies limitations of language, experience, and genius by gently entering their eardrums and seizing their souls. Sunday evening, she falls into bed, setting the alarm for 3 a.m., somewhat lamenting what's undone. But isn't this what she tells her students? Leave your room. Follow a trail that begins in a book, turns down a street, raises a window, unhinges a page, opens a door, starts up the laptop. You storm your brain, clustering, mapping, framing, and teeming, awake and aware. Thank you so much, everybody. All right, hold on, I got my announcement. Okay, so there's more of these on the table, but we have a couple more things this semester.
next month on the 9th, which is really not that far away, December, which is really freaking me out a little bit. We have winter-themed open mic, so bring your poems, bring your songs, bring your short stories, whatever it is you do. And then on the 11th, just a couple days after, we have a special performance by M.L. Lieber. And if you go to the website, you can go to his webpage, and you can listen. He does experimental music and poetry, and he's brought to Buff State on a grant, and so he's sharing that time with Rooftop as well. So I please encourage you, and both of those events will be up here. If it looks crowded when you come up, just grab a chair on your way, because I'm realizing when we have a lot of people, the space gets pretty crowded pretty fast. I want to thank Barbara and Irene so much for reading today, and thank you all for coming out. And please take your chairs, if they're the blue wood ones, and bring them back to the areas where they go. Thank you.